Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Agrotech Foods Q3 FY18 earnings conference call hosted by Anand Rathi Shares and Stock Brokers. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Aditya Joshi from Anand Rathi. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks a lot. Good afternoon, everyone. On behalf of Anand Rathi Shares and Stock Brokers, I welcome you all to Agrotech Foods Limited 3Q FY18 earnings conference call. We have with us on the call senior management of the company, represented by Mr. Sachin Gopal, Managing Director, and Mr. Arijit Dutta, CFO. I would now like to hand over the call to Mr. Sachin for his comments. Thanks, and over to you, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much, and welcome to everybody to the call. As usual, we'll walk you through the highlights of the results, and after that, we can take any questions that you may have. So we closed quarter three of this year with a reasonably strong 28% growth in our total foods business, right? And this more than offset a somewhat flattish revenue performance on sunflower oil and a decline of about 8% in our commodity crystal oil business, right? And that, in turn, works through into a total revenue growth of about 4%, which you see reflected in the top line. The driver of the growth in the foods business was pretty much the HFS or the traditional trade channel, which we see coming through very, very nicely as we continue to invest in distribution expansion. So if you actually break it up by channel in the traditional trade, we saw almost a 45% growth in the total foods business, right, on a quarter-on-quarter basis. Definitely, this has some, if you will, acceleration built in because of a lower base which impacted due to demonetization in the month of November 2016. But having said that, even if you discount that, I would say the total growth of 28% will probably come down due to demonetization to about 24%. And then if you add back the price reduction that we've done as a consequence of the GST changes and benefits of input tax credit that we passed on to consumers, it will still come back to about a 25%-25.5% level, right? So returning to the traditional trade or the HFS channel, the growth of about 45% on a quarter-on-quarter basis was driven by peanut butter. Peanut butter recorded about a 196 index, so revenues were up 96% versus last year's same quarter. The bagged snack business as well started to perform very well. The index was about 216, which means that revenues on bagged snacks from the traditional channel were about 116% up versus last year. And ready-to-cook as well saw growth, with revenue being up about 17% up versus prior year. In almost all cases, the volume growths are significantly higher, right? And that, in general, on a total portfolio basis, reflects the fact that we passed on significant pricing, which in turn has helped drive consumer demand, improve capacity utilization, so on and so forth. The modern trade was slower, a little slower than the traditional trade, but nevertheless performed reasonably well with a total growth of about 21%. And peanut butter growing, again, at very similar levels, about 68%-70%. Bagged snacks was relatively flattish as we continued to see more competitive activity in the modern trade with more and more new competitors. And ready-to-cook as well grew by about 11%. So traditional trade growing by about 45% on foods, modern trade growing by about 21%. And it was really only the tax-exempt channels, right, which we've covered earlier, which is CSD, CPC, and many other channels or customers who were getting benefits under the pre-GST regime, who are not getting many of those benefits now, and therefore are also figuring out how to cope in the new system, right? The tax-exempt channels continue to be below prior year, running about 9% lower than last year. The numbers on the tax-exempt channels don't really impact too much the peanut butter and the bagged snacks business, but they do impact the ready-to-cook business. So as a consequence, total growth on peanut butter for the quarter was about up 84% in revenue. the bags and snacks business was up about 65% in revenue, and the ready-to-cook business was up about 9% in revenue. The corresponding volume growth figures for these last set of numbers that I called out are roughly as follows. Corresponding to the 84% growth in revenue in peanut butter, we saw about 114% growth in volume. Corresponding to the ready-to-cook growth of about 9% in revenue, we saw about a 14% growth in volume. And corresponding to the 65% odd growth in bag snacks, we probably see about a volume growth in excess of about, in the region of about 75%. So overall, very, very strong volume performance, both traditional trade and modern trade performing well. Tax exempt channel starting to come back, so performance, you know, not as weak as it was in quarter one and quarter two, but still not there entirely. But having said that, the future of this company from a long-term growth perspective will certainly be the traditional trade. That is where we need to expand and expand heavily, and which we are doing through distribution expansion. So if we can, you know, if we can continue to invest in this channel, we will continue to see disproportionate rewards, if you will. The driver of the growth of this in the foods business is pretty much what we also indicated to you in our November investor meet in Mumbai. It is more distribution, more distributors, and a broader portfolio. So to give a context, in December 2017, we built about 890 distributors in our system. The similar number for December 2016 was 680. So we basically increased our direct distributor base, which in turn is the facilitator for coverage. This doesn't necessarily represent exactly a replica of what coverage will increase, but it's an indicator, and it's a good indicator, right? Because as a company, if we start being able to get good distributors, get new distributors, accelerate distributor appointment, certainly with the right portfolio, it can do wonders for us. So we are pretty much, I would say, on track. We should close the year somewhere between a 900 and a 1,000 direct distributors, and then we can look for, you know, what is the type of goal that we need to set for next year. So I walked you through in detail the revenue and the volume performance on foods. So we quickly also go through the other businesses. In terms of Sunrock, we saw a volume growth of about 7%, but the revenue, as I indicated earlier, was flat. This is driven largely by two factors. One is, as usual, there is some amount of attrition in the higher margin oils, and the growth, the revenue growth coming from the lower margin, if you will, edible oils, and also some impact of the price pass on that we've done, right, as a consequence of passing on of input tax credit that we were not getting earlier. So in total, therefore, Sunrock oils volume growth of 7%, revenue flat at 0%. Crystal saw some impact on volume. It was down about 7% in volume and down about 8% in value. This is the commodity end of our business. This certainly, which always and will continue to see some amount of variation depending on a quarter-on-quarter basis, but nothing I would say overall to be concerned about. The vending business now represents a reasonably small part of our business. In total, you know, on a 213 odd crores turnover that we generated in quarter three of the current year, only about 1.8 crores came from the vending business. So that's less than 1% of the business. So as a company, I think we are now in a happy state. It is not that we don't want to be in this business. I think it's necessary to compete in all parts of the business, but we don't want to be dependent and vulnerable on this business because, again, it's a commodity type of business with limited pricing power. So I think it's a happy state to be in, and we are reasonably, you know, satisfied with where we are there. So that, I think, broadly covers off the top line and breaks it up into each of the different business elements, right? We'll now walk you through the next other lines of the P&L. As you can see here, employee benefits are pretty much constant versus last year. So that really means that, you know, we continue to see productivity gains from an employee perspective. By way of perspective, between last year and this year, we will have at least more than 200 people on the rolls relative to, let's say, a 12-month perspective, all right? And that means that, along with salary increases, we have been able to fund mostly through efficiency gains, right? And advertising and promotion does need a word of comment here. As you can see, it's up almost about more than a crore and 10 odd. But actually, the increase is much more than this. Because last year's figure of about 872 includes the 15% service tax, for which we were not getting input tax credit. So on a comparable like-for-like basis, you need to add a figure. It could be, it's difficult to call it exactly what it is. Maybe it's 80 lakhs, 1 crore, but last year's base would have been lower, right? And that's the reason. So A&P this quarter was disproportionately higher than last year's same quarter. That was a conscious decision that we've taken because, as you know, in June and July, because of the lower revenues that came through, particularly because of the impact on the tax exempt channel, we were forced to reduce our advertising spends. So we wanted to come back as much as we could, and therefore, have beefed it up. However, this is not necessarily going to, you're not necessarily going to see this in quarter four. We will assess now that we've come back, we've got in good shape, good growth figures, strong momentum. We'll assess what is the right level of spending for quarter four, which of course we'll report to you at the end of the quarter. Other than that, there's not a lot more. The other basically big change item is interest. As you can see, last year we were in a borrowing mode. That is no longer the case. We would have closed December. How many crores in the bank?
Yeah, 18
about 18, around 18 to 19 crores is what we would have closed the month of December with in the bank. Therefore, we are in the happy situation right now earning interest. And that is also helping to drive the growth in both profit before tax and the profit after tax. I think that covers off the highlights. I don't want to spend more time from our side, and we can take on any questions that you have. So back to you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin with the question answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question, you may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. A reminder to all the participants present in the conference, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one at this time. We take the first question from the line of Sameer Gupta from India Infoline. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good afternoon. Just two questions from my side. Sir, one is that you have mentioned the food business growth at 28% for this quarter. Just wanted to confirm, this is overall food business, including all the vending and the CSD channels. And if not, then can I have that figure for this quarter as well as for 9 months? The second question is, while gross margin on a YOY basis is flat, it is basically down around 150 bips sequentially on a QOQ basis. So can I know the reason for this contraction?
Okay. Thanks, Amit, and thanks for asking both the questions at the same time. The first, the answer to it is yes, that 28% is for the total foods business. So it includes everything, right? It includes all channels and it includes all businesses, right? If you want to know what is the figure on a year-to-date basis, it will be in the region of about 17%. Okay, so that's the answer to the first question. The second is that the gross margin increase. You're right, absolutely right. On a sequential basis, the percentage is lower, and that's largely because we saw an imposition of import duty in the month of November, right? And as you know, we've always and that resulted in an increase in the commodity input oil prices. We've always increased prices in line with the commodity inputs, right? However, in this case, we also are tracking one other factor, which is from an anti-profiteering perspective, what is the benefits we are getting and what is the pass-on that we are doing, right? So we needed in this quarter, in quarter three, to be able to pass on more, right, so that we were more in line and, on a cumulative basis for the period of the anti-profiteering governance, if you will, right, which is basically 24 months, we are cautious, right, that whatever benefits they are getting, they are passing on back to the consumer. So this will probably be, the first time that there was something, an event of this kind, where there was import duty, higher edible oil prices, but we didn't actually take up price, so that then our pass on to the consumer increases. So then in total, we are in line with whatever are the requirements of the government from a regulatory perspective in terms of anti-profitability.
So this import duty hike basically is only affecting our edible oils business, right?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to all the participants. If you wish to ask a question, you may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. Next question is from the line of Anuj Gupta from Perfect Resource. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, Anuj.
Good afternoon, sir. Sir, I'm sorry I missed the opening comment. So if the data is there, so you can just tell me, I'll listen to the recording. So could you please share the revenue breakup for the branded food vending business and also the number for Christian?
Okay, and the second question, Anuj?
And we know you don't buy Nielsen data, but like according to your best estimate, can you share the distribution reach and number of stores for branded food business, namely popcorn, peanut butter and nachos?
Okay, thank you. So Anuj, thank you for being polite and respectful and offering to hear the recording. So on the breakup, I've already given it, so if you just take the time out, huh? Okay. As far as the distribution is concerned, I can as you correctly observed, we don't buy Nielsen, but I can give you our best management judgment on the distribution figures, right? We would have probably added about during this period about 20,000 stores on ready to cook popcorn. So that would probably have moved up from about 240,000 stores last year to about 265,000 in the current year. And I think our internal estimates are that peanut butter would have moved up to about 55,000 plus stores, right? Compared to about 50,000 stores in the beginning of the year. The growth in tortilla chips, however, would be lower. I mean, the growth is still significant, but if the figure will be lower, it will be in about mid 30,000 stores. Okay?
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Rahul Maheshwari from ID Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. I have a few questions. Two questions. First, can you give a rural strategy that no doubt the products which are there, those are more towards the urban based. But what's your strategy on rural? What is the distribution which is going on? How much the rural is contributing towards your overall top line and what is your ambition? And also the second question is on the distribution. You told that you had added as on 890 distributors as compared to 680. Can you give what kind of parameters or internal benchmarks means one distributor is covering how many outlets? What is the targets being given and what is the benchmark by FY19-20? What kind of distribution expansion you are expecting for the entire business?
Thank you, Rob. So I think we are a little long way away from rural strategy because, we still have a lot of scope as far as just urban India is concerned, right? And from that, of course, large or the smaller urban centers also tend to act as feeder markets for rural, right? Primarily through wholesale. I think the key figure here is really the number of distributors, right? As I said earlier, we expect to close somewhere between 900 and 1,000 direct customers in the current year. As we go forward, the question is how much we can ramp up this up and how fast we can do it. I would say in the long term, the total number of distributors that we'll probably require to be the kind of company that we want to be will be in the region of 3,000 to 4,000 distributors. Okay? Right? It's difficult to give a very precise figure, but it's that kind of the range that we probably need to be in. Right? How quickly we can ramp this up? The biggest barrier to ramping this up earlier was portfolio. We didn't have a portfolio. Today we have a very, very nice portfolio. We have a portfolio, frankly, which covers almost any type of retail store that we need to cover from a business strategy perspective. The challenge for us is that as we expand towns, therefore, and expand coverage, we also need to invest in feet on street. There is no point opening a distributor and not having a, let's say, person who is servicing that distributor to get retail sales, right? You can do that. You can do without that SG&A cost if you want to be a wholesale kind of driven, price-driven business model, right? But that never gives you margin. So if you work a business on, let's say, on a very, very close, you know, 0% PAT or 1 or 2% PAT businesses, you can run them without that SG&A. Because, you know, the share, the price value that you are delivering will get you that distribution. But if you want to build a business which has the right margins, the right EBITDA margins, sustainable profits, then you need to invest in retailing, right? And roughly the model we are working is for every 3 towns that we need to add. So let's say we need to add 3 distributors in 3 different towns. We need to have 1 person on the company payroll, right? So that is an incremental SG&A cost, right, that we need to fund in our P&L. So that's the conversation that we are having at our board, right, that how do we structure the P&L such that we have adequate margin growth, we are able to invest in the brand, we are able to fund the right level of salary increases for existing employees and fund the right level of additional feet on street and yet have the right growth and margins so we get to the profitability levels that we have outlined for ourselves.
So currently your total, as per the analyst meet data, you had an overall reach of roughly 3.5 lakh to 4 lakh outlets at a distributor of something 850 direct distributor. So in short, one distributor is covering how many retail outlets? So by the time you reach 3,000 to 4,000 distributor, it is the proportionate you are working in terms of the direct reach number of outlets?
Yeah. So there's no, I'll just close, there's no exact science because it also, you know, it's a function of the number of beats that you put. But broadly speaking, I'll answer your question, and you're right, that comes to the second part of your question, that versus the current level, let's say we are between 3.5 and 4 lakhs, I think very quickly we should be able to get to the 500,000 mark that we are looking for, right? So broadly speaking, probably anywhere between, you know, 1,500 to 2,000 distributors, we should cross the 500,000 mark in terms of actual retail outlets, right? How much it will exactly be, that is something we'll report back to you on a quarter-to-quarter basis with the best judgment, right? Because as Anuj earlier said, we don't really buy Nielsen, but we'll get back to you. Okay.
Thank you so much for your insight.
Okay. Thank you, Raul. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to the participants. If you wish to ask a question, you may press star and 1 on your touchtone telephone. We take the next question from the line of Percy Pankati from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. My question is on the sales breakup that you have given. And
I think we lost him, man. Maybe we can go to the next question and come back to Percy.
Hello?
Sir, we have him back.
Okay. We got him. Yeah.
Yeah. Sir, my question is regarding the sales breakup that you have given, and I'm having a little trouble reconciling that with the overall sales growth. Your overall sales growth was 3.2%. Your food sales growth was 28%. And given that foods is about 1/4 of your overall turnover, the foods itself should drive the total sales growth by 7%. Your sundrop oil was flat. Crystal, which is 10 to 12% of your sales, was down 8%. So that drags down the console sales by about 1%. So 7 minus 1, you should have a 6% overall sales growth, whereas your sales growth is half of that. So that's the first question. The second question is basically on your ad spend. So if you could just give us an idea for the first 9 months, for the Sundrop peanut butter, what is your ad spend as a percentage of sales for that brand?
Okay. So, Percy, my mathematical capabilities, I'm sure, are not as good as yours, right? But I'll try and answer your question. When you take the growth, you have to take it on the base. Correct?
Right.
If you take a food's growth, and you take it on a last year's base, which was in the region of 20 to 21%, right, you'll get about a 500 index points improvement. You won't get to 7. You won't get a 7% growth. You're taking it, you see, if the 20 to 21 has improved to about 25% of our turnover, you have to take it on the base, not on current. Because remember, the growth is on the base.
Understood.
So that will give you 5. From that, you take out the one or whatever in decimal places, you get to the four, which is more or less the numbers that we have in our business. Okay?
Okay.
Hmm? And the second part is on the ad spend. Peanut butter, yes, I can share with you the ad spends on peanut butter. Actually, I've already provided them on a year-to-date basis in the investor presentation, right? So, you know, I'm sure there's not much new part that I'll be able to give you, right? At best, I'll be able to give you one more month of data because the investor meet was only a month ago, right? So on a year-to-date basis, we have spent, bear with me, 1.5, 1.82, we spent about 3 crores on a year-to-date basis on peanut butter, revenue on media, right? And revenues are about, in excess of 32 crores. So you're looking at about 10% spent on a year-to-date basis. Okay.
So for such a nascent product, why only a 10% spend? I mean, when you are at such a nascent stage, generally products have had ad spend as high as even 30 to 50% of top line.
Yeah, so I think, you know, this is a slightly larger philosophical question. So I'll take it and then we'll move to the next question. Since you want to limit it to two, but no, it's okay. It's a good question. See, we are a company which is focused on delivering good growth and profitable growth. Okay? So we compare, for example, our list, our results with other companies in the space, including not only listed companies, but unlisted companies as well. Right? So when you compare our results, let's say against unlisted companies like, you know, who are newer entrants into the market, right? Like us. So if you compare it with companies like Mars, Wrigley's, General Mills, Kellogg's, Mondelez, which is not so new, Hershey's. We have about the lowest level of employee cost, right? So to give you a perspective, our employee cost as a percentage of sales is only about 6%, right? Whereas many of these companies will run with employee costs of about 9 to 23%, you know, as high as 23% of sales. We have a very moderate level of depreciation, in part because 75% of our business is third party, but also because we are very, very concerned and, you know, we target a very low cost capex structure. So our depreciation on a full year basis is probably about 2% of sales. Most of these companies will be in the 3 to 6% range. And our A&P spends are about 4%, whereas most of these companies will be in the region of about 7 to 24%. As a consequence, our EBITDA levels are reasonably good, right? They're in the 9-odd% range, whereas many of these companies are losing money, are at 6 or 7% EBITDA margins. So that's the strategy that we are following. Don't ever expect us to go and say 20% ad spend. Why? Why do we need to spend investor money to get to do a 20% ad? If we need to, yes. But if we can get growth without, then why not? Right? So what's wrong with a business like peanut butter, where we have an 84% growth versus last year in the quarter? On a year-to-date basis, revenues are up 72%, and we are managing with a much lower A&P. Right? So the more efficient we are in these three parameters, employee cost, depreciation, and advertising and promotion spends, the better the reward for us as shareholders of the company. Okay?
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Tosi.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Hiten Vachala, individual investor.
It's my first time to participate in the conference call, though I've been holding these shares for more than 5 years. And a pleasure talking to you one-on-one. I would like to know, out of the 214 crores of sales that we've clocked in, how much is the percentage of food business? And when is it expected to cross 50% of our actual sales? Do we have any plans to convert our company into 100% foods company by either hiving off or selling out the edible oil business completely? The second question is that how do you look at the parent support on developing new products? I have just observed that Mr. Hendrik Myberg has been appointed on board of a couple of months ago. And he brings in along with him a lot of R&D experience. So how are we looking at his experience utilization in the company? Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the question. So both very good question. The percentage of the food business this time is 25%. So actually, if you And that's the reason why I mentioned, you know, even in the investor meet, I said we are definitely now foods is in the third phase of the transformation, right, which is 25 to 50%. I wish I could tell you how quickly it will move to 50%. I think the answer to that is as quickly as we can make it possible. It's certainly showing all signs of momentum, right? It's clear that we are at a different stage in the journey of the company if you look at the more recent performance, and particularly when you look at the performance of the traditional trade, right? So, you know, that means that we've got the portfolio right, and, you know, if we simply invest on feet on street, you know, simplify our distributor appointment procedures, which we've done, we can see very, very good growth, right? So I would like it sooner than later, but unfortunately, I won't be able to give you an exact time on that. To your answer on 100%, the answer is never, right? The reason is simple, that Sundrop is the jewel, you know, in the basket. And how we manage the Sundrop brand is going to be very, very important for us going forward, right? So as we already mentioned, and if you see again the investor presentation in November, we've already taken Sundrop, just not having it an edible oil brand, it moved into peanut butter. And we've also used it to enter Indian snacks with peanuts and peas, and that's working very, very well for us. Over a long-term period, we don't see Sundrop, and long-term may not be that long, right? Because it also depends on how we spend our advertising resources. The more we spend on foods as compared to edible oils, the faster will be the conversion of the brand to a food brand, right? So the foods part will grow. However, edible oils will always remain there. There is no reason why it will not remain, because it's an inherent part of the brand itself, right? But its share of our revenues and share of our profits and our dependence on it on profits will reduce over time. And that's part of the strategic plan that we outlined many years ago, because edible oils is a business is always going to be vulnerable. It does not inherently as a category have the moats that we would like to have for the kind of businesses that we want to build. We want to build businesses with moats, and there is absolutely no reason, or nobody can ever justify, that edible oil has moats. It doesn't have moats. And anybody who doesn't believe so is likely to be stuck in a situation where new competitors will enter, and you will be forced to up your share, your spending every year to match their share of spending. So if you actually go into the spends data, which we've identified in the investor meet, you can see the moats are low, new people are coming in, they will spend more money, right, especially in a world with cheap money, and you will be forced to keep spending more and more money. And the more money you spend, the less you make net after marketing expenses, and it's possible that a brand over a five-year period is making less money after marketing expenses than it was in the 5 years prior to that. Right, so it's not that we will ever exit edible oils, but its role is clarified and very clear in the portfolio of the company. In terms of the parental support, we are very fortunate to have a very good parent, and it's not only around let's say Henny, who came on the board a little while ago, as you correctly mentioned, in terms of R&D. It is also about the insights that your parent gives you. So let me clarify. We've just launched Act 2 Diet Pop, right? And the initial response is very good, right? And we will be on media very soon with the product in February. Now, there have been similar movements and trajectories in the U.S. also, right? But what happens is, if you're not in the market, you don't get the insights. You will see the product, you will see the performance of other products, which have, you know, and popcorn is a very fast-growing category in the U.S., but we may not understand all the, you know, the little details of what went into the making of success. You can't do that sitting so many thousands of miles away. You can go visit the U.S., you can buy the product on Amazon, but you won't understand that. That you'll understand only if you're competing with those companies in the marketplace. And we are fortunate, therefore, that, you know, we have a parent who's very active with us, who provides us those insights. The insights are as important as the R&D. I repeat, the insights are as important as the R&D. And if we crack all those insights, and of course we get the R&D, there's no problem at all. By way of reinforcement on the R&D perspective, the parent gives us everything that we need. So whatever we want to ask for, we get, right? But having said that, the final choice is the market and this company and the board of directors on how the board wants to drive its agenda in the market, right? So for example, let me give you an idea. We are extremely successful right now in frozen food in the US. But right now, as a board, we've decided that, look, you know, frozen is not the immediate area of opportunity for India. And there's nobody telling us, no, 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 now you have to drive frozen hard in India. So the choice is ours on what we want to drive, and then we go to the parent and we get unlimited support. Thank you. I hope that answers both your questions. Second one, hopefully better.
A reminder to all the participants present in the conference, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. We take the next question from the line of Rajiv Anand from Nanolia Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. My question is related to the tax expenditure. What type of tax we in visage in FY18 and FY19? And second question is, what type of tax we expect in FY19?
So thank you, Rajiv. I'll try and answer both your questions. And on the tax part, if Arijit would like to chip in, I'll ask him to chip in. So there is no significant tax changes that we are expecting in our business between this year and next year and last year. The only tax benefits that we take now pertain to the R&D investments that we make in our company. The benefit, I think, is around a crore or approximately in that region. Right. So as Arijit said, you know, it's not so significant, and we don't expect to see any further changes as far as that tax rate is concerned, right? So, you know, when we project, we just assume a reasonably similar tax rate, okay? In terms of CapEx, you know, we've reached a stage now where I mentioned this earlier, our ongoing CapEx is not that significant, right? We spend probably around, you know, $2 million, about 13 to 14 crores every year, because the bulk of the investment we've made, you see, over the last 7-8 years, we've invested more than 60 crores in just infrastructure alone. Infrastructure means land, buildings, you know, so the base is already set, right? And so the incremental investments that you need after that are very, very low, right? So if you look, say, let's say today we want to put up a new line and we want to enter a new category, which I've talked about in the investor meet, I've said we're going to see more peanut butter extensions coming from us. We don't really need to, it's not even a brownfield project in many ways, because in a brownfield project, you still need to put up the building and the sheds. In our case, you know, in addition to the building, there's already a lot of space available in our bigger plant in Gujarat. So it's not significant to that perspective. The other is, bear in mind that the CapEx that we've done over the last 5 to 7 years has been in a large number of categories. It has not been concentrated on one category, right? The advantage of that is that, let's say, peanut butter. We made an initial investment in the region of about 35, 36 crores, right? And, you know, we're running right now very, very close to full capacity. But to increase the capacity doesn't cost us a lot of money, right? So if you want a 20% increase in capacity, it's just a question of adding some balancing lines. All right. So that's why the capex requirements as such are not that large coming out of our free cash flow. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Rajit.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Ritesh Rangwala from 9Reverse Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just following up on the last question on capex. So previously you mentioned that, you know, to have a pan-India coverage for your foods portfolio, you would ideally require around 7 plants. You currently have 5 and you have one more that would come on stream in fiscal 19. Any plans on when you would set up the last plant?
Okay. Any other questions or is it just the one?
No, that's it. Thanks.
Okay. So thank you for asking that question. I appreciate it because I should have actually covered that. So I owe you one. We expect the Chittoor plant to come, as you mentioned, on next year. They're currently on the end of the month, we should have finished the roof. So sometime in FY19, that plant will come on stream. We expect that we'll start construction on the Calcutta plant in early next year, FY19. Let us say by Q2, we should be able to start construction. So let's assume that by FY20, we should be fully in place with the 7 plant model.
Okay. Sir, any cost estimation on what that plant would cost? the Kolkata plant?
Since they are not at all, again, they are small. That is why, you know, they come in, this, they get included in this whole $2 million, 13 crore that
okay.
I talked about. You know, these plants are basically being put in place for two reasons. Okay? One, to make ready-to-eat popcorn. It's
right.
impossible to do a ready-to-eat popcorn business with one or two plants, right?
Okay.
And, you know, therefore, this gives us a lot of competitive advantage, right? For example, you guys would have read that, you know, Hershey's has recently bought Skinny Pop in the U.S., right? Now, to enter and, you know, launch Skinny Pop in India, they will have to actually set up an infrastructure to be able to cope with that, right? So this gives us significant long-term competitive advantage versus bigger players and gives us not an equal but an almost equal playing field versus smaller players because, you know, there's always a proliferation of small players, right?
Okay.
And it also gives us one more opportunity, which is that as we, and I mentioned this again in the investor meet and in our presentation, you know, we're also looking at Indian snacks. And Indian snacks typically are not a large proliferation of plants, right? So if you look at any of the Indian snack players, they tend to operate with big plants and then service directly from those plants because the freight cost on Indian snacks is less than Western snacks.
Okay.
However, but that limits you because, you know, for example, if you have a plant in Noida, you're not really going to be able to leverage that plant in Noida in Chennai. But these seven plants will give us the opportunity to also do bulk manufacture of Indian snacks and then repack them closer to market so that we actually have with the same product portfolio, a possibly much wider geographic coverage reach. So it may not give us depth of distribution completely, like say one Balaji in Gujarat, but it will give us widespread geographical coverage. Okay? And the third one, and we will be looking at this, that as we enter products which require some amount of, you know, controlled temperature condition shipment, not necessarily not frozen, but let's say, products with a, let's say, you know, where you need to, you know, ship at 18 to 20 degrees or, you know, even 8, whatever, in that range, then these seven plant structures will enable us to do long distance shipment of temperature controlled shipments because from each of these seven plants, then we are very, very close to all the markets that we need to.
Sure. Okay. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for that.
Thank you. Thank you for asking the question.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Rahul Maheshwari from IDBI Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Thank you for once again. Two questions. Currently in FY17, your foods business was 170 to 180 crore. What kind of margins you are making in foods business, gross margin or EBIT level kind of?
Okay. And Rahul, anything else?
And second thing was on the when the seven plants are being installed by FY20, what kind of cost efficiency you would be getting in terms of the freight cost or in terms of the distribution efficiency, which would be adding to your margin expansion in terms of the cost savings?
Okay. So, thank you. So, to answer your first question, see, we closed the food business at about 170 crores last year, right? And now, as of this year, as of, let's say, quarter three, I think we are already at about 100 and, what do you call it, about 148 crores, right?
Right.
So we did between 53 and 54 crores in foods in quarter three. So that means that if we do a similar level in quarter three, in quarter four, right, it could
no,
be
but,
in the region of...
What kind of margins you are making?
I'm coming to that, right? Okay. So that should take us somewhere in the region of 200 crores, okay? Now, in terms of margins, this is a business which is currently delivering between 25% and 30%, right? So I would say probably in that ballpark. This was actually a business which we had even better margin, but we parted with some amount of margin to be able to pass on, to do all the input tax credits pass on that we needed to by law to the consumer, right? So you are probably looking at a margin on this business this year of in the, you know, 50 to 60 crores. They're not the 60, but 50 to 55 odd crores that you're looking at in terms of actual margin on this business.
So roughly 20% kind of thing on, 25%?
I said between 25 and 30%. Not 25, but not 30 in that business. Okay?
Okay. And going forward also, it would be remain in this or it would be in the upward because of the
spend?
And
It has to be upward, no? Because now we have already done whatever input tax credit pass on. We have to do a little more because we find there is a deficit, we'll do that. But it has to be upwards only. So it has to be, right? The challenge, as we discussed in the investor meet, is that we need to balance the portfolio. Because if you have a lot of low margin items, then the margin doesn't increase, right? But on the other hand, we also should get the benefits of operating leverage. Peanut butter is a good example where we've got the benefits of operating leverage, right? As you get scale, you get the volume, and it's fantastic, right? Our manufacturing cost of peanut butter in December 2017 must be about half, less than half of what it was in December 2016, right? So I think there was somebody who mentioned the other day, you know, management always underestimates operating leverage, and I think we are also guilty of that, right? How it plays out, I think time will tell, right? It's obviously you get much faster and quicker operating leverage on a single plant, whereas if you have a seven plant model, it's going to take longer to get operating leverage, right? But you get it. Whichever way you talk about it, you get it. It doesn't lend itself to easy mathematical projections. So I wish I could give you all of those details, but it's there, right? And, you know, we have to have the confidence and the data supports that.
Just
in terms of I'll close there now because second question, okay? In terms of the freight, yes, the seven plant model is designed to reduce our freight. In the early days, our freight level on back snacks is as high as 28%. We are now clocking on a steady state level, both on popcorn and on extruded snacks, about 12%, right? Can it be lower? The answer is yes. Having said that, also as you open more plants, what happens is that you are able to reach out to more places, right? So, for example, from a plant in Hyderabad, we can probably deliver the right value proposition only in Chennai and Bangalore. But with a plant in Chittoor, we can deliver it in Coimbatore, we can deliver it in Hosur, we can deliver it in Mangalore, we can deliver it in Hubli, you know, those kind of things. So, I think the bigger benefit, though, is all around the operating leverage, right? With more plants, the freight will probably be, if it's not 12, it might be 10, it will be in that ballpark, right? But the bigger benefit will not be in freight, it will be in getting the scale that we need to drop our manufacturing costs.
Just to ask that, if on FY17, your EBITDA was 8% and you want to scale your food business from 25 to 50% kind of thing, so whenever within 3-5 years down the time, are you expecting your EBITDA margin to double it to 15% kind of thing?
I won't be able to comprehend in 4 to 5 years, but I think I've said that, we would be, we are already at close to 9% in the current year, if you look at the numbers, right?
Yeah.
I think it will be in the 8.5%. And I think I've also said in the last meeting, which is, you know, posted on our website, that once we get to 9, then we need to cross 10, and then we'll seek our next goal, right? So I wish we were able to give you a great idea of, you know, where we are going to be and how long it's going to be after 10. But for now, let's just concentrate on, you know, getting the 9 and then crossing the 10, right?
Okay.
10 is not a best-in-class margin, but it's not a unrespectable margin, if you will, okay? Or whatever is the right English word for it.
Yep, yep. Thank you so much. Yep.
Thank you, Rahul. Thank you.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Manish Bodar from Renaissance Investment. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Can you probably three questions first. So can you give the 9-month growth for, let's say, the oils category and for you it's specific? And has there been any price revision in this category, let's say, in the 9 months? And why is the company not even able to grow, you know, let's say, you know, GDP level growth for this category at large? And so, you know, how should one look at this category, let's say, from a 3-year perspective for yourself?
So, on a year-to-date basis, Manish, I'll tell you, on Sunrock Oil, volume is flat and our revenues are down 5%. And on Crystal, the volume is flat and the revenues are down 4%. Okay? Right? That is as far as the business is concerned. That is obviously also influenced by all the impact of GST, so on and so forth. But that's the number as it stands. As far as we are concerned, we are not focused on growing edible oil business and declared any volume or value targets. If you go through it, we've never declared those because we have no interest in it, right? Our interest in edible oil is restricted to saying
How much money can we continue to make on a sustainable basis, right, such that we can continue to invest in the future of this business, right? So we've articulated this earlier, and I think I said it in the call also earlier. We want to build businesses with moats. We are not interested in businesses that don't have moats. Edible oils as a category will never have moats, right? So you can participate in it. You can say I'm going to grow volume by 7 to 8% or 10% or 20%, whatever number you might want. But it's not going to be profitable for the shareholder ever, right? Let me give you an example. Let me share some numbers with you on spends. Okay, so that will hopefully, you know, enable a better understanding.
Thanks for that. But I'm aware of the spends as such. But I'm just trying to understand, you know, why is the category or why you know the category is growing, you know, high single digit at least. So why aren't we able to match at least the category growth?
Yeah.
And
so
I understand you have a defocused strategy. But
yeah. So Manish, you can match a category growth, then you have to spend in line with the category, right? So if you spend in line with the category, you can match category growth. There's no problem.
Because
right? But when you're spending in line with the category, you are diluting your P&L, right? If you spend in line with the category and your price realization over a five-year period actually declines, as has happened to some of our competitors, even if you generate volume growth, your profit after marketing expenses will come down. Right? So that's the choice. Is that good for the shareholder? That's up to the shareholder to decide. Okay.
You're also trying to infer then that, let's say, a brand which is entrenched, let's say, you know, versus a new brand, let's say, when you have Emami or Patanjali coming in the category, you know, the new brand is able to take up incremental share despite the brand being entrenched for years. Is that the right way to look at it?
That will always happen. Of course, and that will always happen in categories where there are no moats. It will be a function of who's spending more. That will always happen. Let's look at quarter two. This is the spending for quarter two. We spend 80 lakhs, right? Saffola spent 14 crores, 13.5 crores. Fortune spent 13 crores. Emami spent 39 crores. And Patanjali spent 57 crores. Guess who's going to take share? Yeah? You don't need to be a genius to guess that, right?
And last one of this spend should be only... would it be largely, you know, ad spends or would it be paid spends?
These are only ad spends, because, huh? Okay, Manish, so we close with that. These are only, we don't know the trade spends. Trade spends will be over and above this. Okay?
Okay, great.
Okay,
so,
all right. Thank you.
One more thing, if I may.
But no questions, then it answers to everybody else here. Okay, apologies.
Okay,
huh?
Okay, thanks.
Okay, huh? Thank you. Don't take it other way.
Yeah, that's right, thanks.
Okay, huh? Okay, ma'am.
Thank you. Well, that seemed to be the last question.
Okay.
I now have the floor over to the management for their closing comments.
Good. No, thank you very much all for taking the time to join us for the call. And, you know, we look forward to talking to you after another 3 months. Okay. Have a great day.
Thank you very much. Well, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Anand Rathi Shares and Stock Brokers, that concludes this conference call for today. Thank you all for joining us. You may disconnect your lines now. Thank you.